can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Greg Pappas on the board. He had a guess. S&P futures up 4 and NASDAQ futures up 27. This is after we finished at an all-time high yesterday. The CPI number was supposed to be 0.4, which it actually was, but it was adjusted down to 0.3. And look at the wealth it gave everybody. Just think what that adjuster guy did to this country, how much wealth he gave us all.
Are they going to revise it next month,
they don't
though?
Revise the CPI.
They're not going to revise it?
Well, no. I mean, they haven't adjusted every month. Last month, I think the adjusted was actually higher than the actual. But most of the time, it's lower. It seems like.
CPI, I mean. That's the inflation gauge?
Consumer Price Index.
Yeah. So if that goes higher, that's worse. Right.
Well, it's supposed to be worse because the Fed's supposed to be fighting it, which is all BS.
Oh.
They aren't fighting it at all, but that's in one man's opinion. But that's another... Now, my question to you is, as a younger trader...
I got your song for you here.
Well, we'll play it on when we come back from the break.
Okay.
It's not my song. It's just...
It's the song.
The song for today. We're at an all-time high. Plus, whenever you can see a picture of Rita Coolidge, it's probably not a bad thing. She's about as hot as it gets, or was.
Well, can't see the pictures over the air.
Well, you can't do pictures over the air. But I got one for you, Mike.
We can post them on Stocks and Jocks, though.
Yeah, we could do that.
There we go.
My nephew, this is leading into my I'm going to have to come up with a big sheet here. Big sheet meaning $1,000 for this new dog, this artificial dog that Greg has for me. But my nephew goes to the... what was it last week? Did you see that? It was artificial something, robots and every other thing on Earth. So he works for a machine shop, and he went over there. And he said the stuff was fascinating. He said the only thing they could probably use was there was a something that did a automatic grinding and smoothing of welds.
It was Automate 2024.
Yeah, something like that.
So. Automation trade show at McCormick Place.
Yeah, he said it was fascinating. But one of the things he said for food service, now Greg knows a lot about food service, evidently all the utensils you use, everything has to be ground flat so it doesn't pick up germs in it and stuff. All your welds on your tables and so forth, they have to be ground flat.
Yeah.
They actually have a machine that does that. So it's pretty interesting, but they
wait a second, the machine does it by itself?
Well, it grinds the weld, yeah. It does. It smooths everything out. So, but he said the best was, and of course I went up to the Tripoli last night to see my lawyer and judge buddies, and I'm talking to Nick, who's the owner, and I said, you know, I don't want to say this in front of your man Mike here, but first thing my nephew ran into was two robot bartenders.
Uh-oh.
and one of them's pulling a beer, and the other one's shaking a martini, and actually did a pretty good job. So, Nick, guess what Nick says?
They don't make mistakes. They don't get drunk. They don't not show up.
They don't give out freebies.
Yeah.
Of course, not many people give out freebies anymore. But
so I wonder how they are at talking to people.
Funny how you should mention that, because guess what Nick's comment was?
They don't have assets.
He said if your older people will never come in because there's nobody to talk to, the younger people wouldn't give a crap. They'd be just fine. They'd be fine with them.
Huh.
What do you think of that?
I don't know. Part of the fun in going in the bar is talking to new people.
Well, without a doubt.
I guess if you're talking to a robot.
Plus, if they happen to be easy on the eyes, it's even better.
Right.
Just saying, you know. But, you know, it's not. You either want somebody you can talk to or somebody that looks good or something. Anyway, but the best is the one you have. I would love that thing. Now, how can you point it where it's got to go?
So, are we talking about the Terminator?
The dog.
The Terminator is the one that Andrew had up here.
Is that Hal in the background?
$9,400.
Is that Hal in the background?
No.
I heard somebody. But so what is this thing?
No, it's me, Tom.
What?
Morning.
Oh, Mike, how are you? So, Mike, you need one of these.
We've got a Terminator robotic flame-throwing dog.
No, we get enough neighborhood dogs around here. I don't need any more dogs.
No, you walk this one, and if somebody messes with you, it's a flamethrower.
Oh, wonderful. That's all we need.
I could use one here. We could use one coming from the car in the morning. What do you think, Greg?
That's not the worst idea.
No, it's not. Anyway, but how do you know the thing's not going to turn and flame you? How do you point it?
Could you imagine? Well, you probably have a fob or something that it knows you. Hopefully the other guy doesn't get or maybe it could even recognize you via facial recognition. Could you imagine if look on somebody's face if you have your dog flamethrow something?
What do you think, Mike? Would cut the crime? What if you had these things on the L trains with you? And everybody comes up to mess with you, and your dog, you could say it was a service dog.
Yeah, you're right. It
service
could be.
Is right.
God. Hey, you know, imagination is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Sure is.
We're going to talk a little bit here because we got Hal coming on in a little bit. Mike, we were talking some yesterday, and we have Greg on here. We have I noticed all the grain prices are starting to creep up a little bit, Greg.
Yeah, we're getting into planting. We've had some inclement weather, and that's actually put us behind in Illinois and Iowa. So we're 14 or 15% behind our average for, call it, 5 years in planting, and then we've got more weather coming. So you pick up a little bit of premium because we're actually behind now. We went from being ahead of schedule to behind.
Well, what I'm trying to tie together here, Mike, is I don't know if you, my brother Dan, I'm going to ask you because everybody knows that, I think everybody should know, that Mike did a lot of intelligence for the armed forces. And my brother, you know, Dan is president of PTI, does an amazing job there for people and for us. In a previous trading life, he was on the trading floor of the Board of Trade and actually traded corn options. And of course, you know Dan being the guy that he is, had to know everything in the world about corn, right? Because every different grain is really a different life, because they're all different. They all have their different months, they all have their different planting, all that stuff's different. So anyway, he started to chart world prices of essentially food for people on a daily basis versus how much money people make worldwide on a daily basis. And years ago, the first time we went over, you can get this stuff from the United Nations, but there's a cereal column, Mike, and I'm asking you if you already know this stuff, you probably do. And when that goes over like $5 or some number, most of the people in the world, the average that people have to spend on food per day is like $5. And when that number for essentially chow goes over 5 hours a day, it means people in general, obviously this all depending on where you are, but are going sort of hungry. And you could sort of plot the first time it went appreciably over that number was the same year we had the Arab Spring. It had like all those uprisings all over the place, all kind of came at once.
Right.
So he always keeps his eye on where world food prices are vis-a-vis kind of income, because it generally can cause some trouble. Did you guys ever look at stuff like that when you were, you know, areas that were like powder kegs and what?
Yeah,
you
know? I didn't normally, Tom, but I'm sure the CIA did. But, you know, we didn't have, we were more concerned about ground forces, so.
So the stuff.
I mean, someone watches it, but I doubt that they're watching it to the level of detail that, well, Dan was, but they probably were, and they're looking for different causes. So yes, I mean,
that's FAO. I'll toss that up in the in the show notes.
Because Mike, a lot of what you guys did, with, you know, let's face it, a lot of places in the world are pretty horrible places to live, and the governments are. I use the term squishy or something, and you know the question is what is going to set it off? What if anything is going to set it off? And I
well, resources. The fight for resources sets it off, Tom. I think really that's what it's about in the Middle East. That's what it's about in Israel, because you know they're concerned about water sources. Where else would you? Well, you're talking about grain, so. I mean, Ukraine, the breadbasket of Europe, has essentially been. I mean, I'm sure their grain levels are lower than what it was before the war started there. And, you know, and you wanted like a little update. Well, the Russians are making some progress. They're headed toward the town of Kharkiv, which is the second largest city in Ukraine. And they're using low-tech bombs, and the Ukrainian, the guy that commanded the region that Kharkiv is in was just relieved. So now the Ukrainians are, well, the Ukrainians have been worried about this forever, and now it's another, whether it's a spring offensive or whether it's a spring counterattack, however you phrase it, the Russians are trying to get a buffer zone. A bigger buffer zone in Ukraine on Ukrainian territory.
So the have they sort of, I won't use the term given up, but the idea of them conquering the whole place is no longer in their mind, or is it?
I think they would probably want to negotiate something to that effect. I don't think Zelensky will let that happen, but it's. I think eventually the Ukrainians will have to cede some territory. The Russian occupied areas around Luhansk, I mean, that's, I think it's a given that that goes away. Not Kiev, but the Crimea is another point of contention. But I mean, essentially Russia has controlled that since 2014, as they have Luhansk since 2014. So
you think somewhere along the line that. That's the deal. The question: how are we going to get there?
Right, and it's so. You know that yes. How are we going to get there? I don't think Zelensky is willing to cede any territory. He wants more Western weaponry, and we have put a limit on our weaponry. And I didn't know this. Lou probably knows it, but we're saying that they can't. Use any of our weaponry, so any of our systems, to strike Russian territory, because we're afraid of the blowback from Putin. So although the Brits have not been as worried about that, supposedly some of their weaponry has been used on Russian territory.
And, well, how do they get to this is a geography question. Is there Ukraine/Russian border that hasn't had any fighting that they can sneak in on, or they have to go over the top of what Russia already has?
No, there is Ukraine-Russia border that hasn't had significant fighting yet, and Ukraine-Belarus too. So, you know, that's what this Kharkiv region is the Russians are trying to build a buffer zone. And I just looked at the map this morning. It's in the Washington Post. I just did a search on the Post for Ukraine, and there's some territory there that the Russians haven't captured yet, and they want to capture. So they're making some inroads there, and the Ukrainians are actually evacuating refugees, so internally displaced refugees from those areas near the border. I think the region is called Belgorod, but it's just the Russians just continue to make minimal progress, but progress nonetheless.
Well, at what cost? I mean, I think Lou was saying it's the Ukraine is just on a manpower situation. You would have to kill almost like 20-1 to stay even.
Right, and that it's. I don't think the Russians are losing too much, historically, the Russians aren't worried about their ground. They're not worried too much about their ground troops. They are willing to expend lives in order to get territory, and I'm sure Putin probably feels that same way. And the leadership, not just Putin.
But what about when people say stuff like that? And obviously, the word was the same way with the Japanese. Are people that different that the mothers and fathers don't care if their kids get killed? I mean, they can't be that.
Well, it's still a predominant, or not a predominant, but there is a very strong lobby in Russia of the mothers against the war or whatever. I don't know what it would be termed for Ukraine. That's essentially why they withdrew from Afghanistan. Now, that might be a generalization, but they probably couldn't afford it. So, the mothers against the war fought hard against continued fighting in Afghanistan, and they eventually won. So, but I don't think it's reached that level yet. And the society in Russia is, so controlled or relatively controlled by Putin and his cronies that it's just a very repressive society. So I think he essentially took Navalny off the streets, and then Navalny ended up dying in prison. And some of the other guys that used to side with him, like there was a press guy, it began with a K, Kedarovsky or something like that. He essentially isolated him too. So he is in control of most of Russia, or he and his people, the United Party, I think it's called.
Whatever happened to the guys that were his mercenary guys? And the guy, he blew up a whole plane just to kill that guy.
Yeah, Wagner, the Wagner group.
Are they toast, or are they? Who's running them?
I think they're still around. He probably co-opted like the second or third in command, and he has that guy working for him now too.
But are those guys all from Russia, or are they just from anywhere in the world that want to go make money?
No, I think they're mostly ex-Russian army guys. That's really what it's that's where he has gotten some of those and they needed work after Russia collapsed, so he continues to find disenchanted former Russian soldiers.
How do they pay him? What did you guys
I'm sure they funnel some way to pay him.
Do you have any idea why do I want to ask you this? What's the job pay? Greg probably feel the same thing. Well, what's the job pay?
I don't think Greg would want to work for the Russians. I have no idea, Tom. An amount that's relatively higher than what the average Russian gets.
Really. I'll make it easy for you. What did the people at Blackwater make?
Oh, I'm sure Blackwater made better money than an average U.S. Army soldier.
Did you ever know anybody who, the day they got their retirement papers, the first day they headed over to Blackwater?
No, but my guys would head to Intel, or people that had worked for me would head to Intel contractors. That's what I was talking about yesterday, actually, with... Some might get hired by PTG, and if they were married to a German, let's say, and they wanted to stay in Germany, they might end up, they would negotiate a salary with us, not with us, but with that particular company, and it'd be around the 100 grand, and they might have been making 60 with benefits for the Army, or 40 with benefits for the Army, because we had PTG employees that were advising them how to get
what
hired
is what does PTG so. Stand for?
Premier Technical Group or Premier Tactical Group. I don't really
something like
remember,
that.
Tom.
Something like yeah. that.
It's, and that was the that was the original minority owned or small minority owned small business that was that got
now,
the contract.
Are small businesses allowed to just go and kill people? How does that work? That's it seems like security.
They weren't killing people, they were support, Greg.
Yeah.
So they were quote, all support. They were just involved in supplying intelligence or helping us with intelligence.
It's
under our they were it's some of them were working for me in the ACE. They had a contract lead and then I would have to work with the contract lead and then that's how we would that's how they would be supervised.
I'm fascinated, Mike, as you know, as you've been on my cost accounting business brain. I keep who controls all that stuff? Who even knows those guys are there? Does it come from Congress?
Is that what the government uses when they don't want to use their own people? Is that what happens?
Or when they don't feel that, okay, what we used to have a source of money in the Army called contingency funding. And we could the Army can use that contingency funding really in any way possible. A lot of times it goes to, weapons and things like that. But in this instance, the contingency funding went to us to source people to add manpower, human resources to what we were doing in our analytical element. So, and we kept getting a source of human funding, all through. It was really in the wake of 9/11. Some of it was we got probably additional. I know we got some additional resources in the wake of the coal exploding or getting the hole in it in the Middle East or in off the coast of Yemen. So,
well, it's sort of like COVID funding. Use it for whatever.
Well, no, that's exactly right. It was sort of like COVID funding. It's just another. It's just another kind of mechanism to get additional resources to the government.
But at your level, which was pretty high, by the way, they essentially told you to work with these guys. Who picked these guys? How high up the chain you got to be for that?
I think our command, which was Intelligence and Security Command, picked these guys, and then we got some of them, yes.
So some general or some congressman or some combo thereof? Or
no, some general and his staff. So it was run through the hiring. The hiring all went through, or the contract went through INSCOM, to the best of my knowledge.
So there's no political... when I say political, anybody from Washington influence on who the people are?
Oh, my headquarters was in Northern Virginia, so there's some Washington play, yes.
Okay, so it's a...
So the Army G2, which is in the Pentagon, probably assisted in setting up the contract to get these additional resources to us and to other units.
The selection process...
That's correct.
I'm always, as you know, Mike, the reason why I'm always intrigued by this is being in Chicago. And after I told the story yesterday about trying to work on the Dan Ryan and all of a sudden the hiring process when nobody was there except the
yeah, when you and Beto were trying, not yeah. Beto, but...
Jim Verbeck.
Yeah.
We ended up working out for me, though, because I became a janitor at the Board of Education, which held me for 6 years of college, so... And whenever I came back on Christmas break too, so it was a way better deal. But still, the selection process. So those guys essentially get their retirement papers, get their retirement check, and then go to work right away.
Right. Well, I mean, there's like for instance, even when I got out of the Army, I had to. How did I? Well, I became a contractor. Actually, what was called then a civilian on the battlefield at Hohenfels, which is a big training center in Europe. I did that for about 3 or 4 months. And then I was able to get on finally as a civilian, as an Army civilian, working for the Army at what was then, or it's still called, the Joint Analysis Center in England. I was then hired as a civilian at that Joint Analysis Center.
Well, you really don't want to spend 20 years of and lose that expertise, right? I mean, why would you?
Well, that was kind of the way I felt, yes.
But does anybody just stay in the Army till they're 60?
Well, you can't stay in the Army to, like, you know, I was passed over for a lieutenant colonel, so I had to get out at a certain point in time. So,
oh, so if you're not promoted, you got to go? I didn't know that. How does that work? Back up. How does that work?
Well, if you get, I didn't make lieutenant colonel, so they then gave me a choice. You can either retire or separate.
What does that mean?
Not separate, but essentially get out. You had to get out. So I had two choices. I could either retire or get out. So I ended up retiring with a slightly reduced pension.
All right, so I guess my question is why? If you're valuable enough to hire you back.
Because after 31 October 1995, I did not have a job. Okay, so I had, at that point, and I opted to essentially retire. So at that point in time, I had 19 years, 5 months, and 11 days of service. And so my pension was reduced by 3%, actually, because I didn't have that full last 20th year of service.
But you, since somebody else snapped you up right away, you obviously had a value. How did you get out of a job?
But I didn't have a value they didn't see fit to promote me to lieutenant colonel, so I had to get out.
So there's no majors.
Still the up or out policy.
Okay, so it's there's no majors that are hanging around after 21 years. If you don't make a lieutenant colonel by the time you're 20, you're out.
That's correct.
That's, why does that sound like insanity to me?
Well, that's just their up or out policy, and maybe there are some majors that have managed to stay on, but it would probably be an exception, and they would have to get Department of the Army approval.
I think so. Hal's going to be on in a minute if he's not already here. We got to go to break here, but you can hang if you want, Mike, because Hal was in the Navy and he was an atomic energy guy. But he wanted no part of a submarine, so he was on a cruiser.
Well, I'm sure the Navy has an up or out policy too, Tom. I thought I'm almost sure that they do, because it applies to all the services.
We can do that after the break.
Yeah, let's do that after the break, because when you see the movies, it always looks like there's a 50-year-old petty officer that knows how the ship works. It's teaching everybody else how to run the damn thing.
With enlisted, it's a different story. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they can go to 30 usually.
S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 26. Again, this is after a record day. We'll be right back with all the news.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 375. Except for another big update yesterday. NASDAQ futures up 22. Dow futures up 22 as well. We have individual stocks that are Walmart beat on revenue or beat on earnings because they claim some richer people are maybe, even though they people think they're rich, maybe have budget problems or shopping at Walmart. They're up 267, that's almost 5%, trading 62.50. And Cisco, instead of getting clobbered on an earnings day like it sort of does, actually is up $1.31 to $50.98, which is did a nice spread in there for my people. And it looks like we're right on the number, which would be kind of nice. Once in a while it happens. Vernier, DAX down 43.2%, FTSE down 15.2%, CAC around down 36.4%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 534, that's 1.4%. I think they might have been down yesterday. Hang Seng up 302, 1.6%, 19,376. And we'll talk to Hal a little bit, and Mike is going to hang, I hope, about where China's been pumping some money in, so is Japan, and how it's helped the markets over there. Shanghai up 2, 31.22. Hang Seng got below, you know what, after break, check this. I think they got below 16, like within 6 months ago. That's a long way up. Yesterday, to all-time highs, Dow's up 349, S&P up 61, NASDAQ up 231. There is no top here. We're going to the sky. Bonds down 1 basis point, 4.34, and bonds have been down. No danger here of going to the 5% number like it looked like we might a couple of weeks ago. The Bund, 2.43 unchanged. Japan, 0.93. That's actually down 2 basis points. Oil, up 6 cents, 78.69. Really quiet in the high 70s. Really quiet. Brent up 4 cents, 82.79. Natural gas unchanged, 2.42. RBOB up a penny, 2.51. We've got gold, which has been rallying. It's actually down 6.90 today, 23.88. We'll see if it mounts another charge at 2,400. Silver up 16 cents, 29.89. Copper up 2 cents, 4.94. The silver, I picked a spread in here way above the market because I was really bullish on silver. It's gone through my strike already after 3 days, so I guess I was right, but I should have gone up another strike. U.S. dollar, 108.6 against the euro, pretty steady. 126.5 against the pound. Again, not moving much there. Bitcoin up 127, 66, 179, so it's bounced back from. It almost got below 60,000, but bounced right back up. What do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Hey, the Cubs won.
Cubs won.
So did the Sox.
Yeah, and the Sox are in double digits.
Yeah, out of the cellar.
Out of the cellar. Oh, morning, everyone. 6:37 here in Chicago. 55 degrees, high of 72 today. Lots of fog, and it turns cloudy with possible thunderstorms later this afternoon. Phoenix, 76 degrees, high of 98, sunny and hot for most of the day. Traffic in Chicago here, Kennedy from Montrose, 18 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 41 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 38 minutes. Inbound Ryan from 95th is 21 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 41 minutes. NBA, Celtics beat the Cavs, that was to win the East, 113-98. Mavs beat the Thunder, that means they're ahead 3-2 now in that series, that was 104-92. In baseball, White Sox beat the Nationals at home. That was 2-0. Diamondbacks beat the Reds at home. That was 2-1. And Cubs win at the Braves. That was 7-1. And the only other note I have was the Avs beat the Stars. That was 5-3, which means Dallas leads that series now 3-2. That's all I got, Chief.
We have the professor as well.
Tom.
How are you, bud? You're on with Mr. Mike Murphy from the Army side of the world. You're from the Navy side of the world. And having both of you guys on, I think it would be spectacular. Mike was just talking about they have an up-or-out policy in the Army. And I think it reminds me so much of the... There's always two ways to look at things. Make that more than two or three or four... Hell, you and I are always arguing on different levels of the chessboard, aren't we? That's what we do. That's what
well,
we do.
I wouldn't say arguing. I would just say disagree.
Discussing on different levels. Of the, we're like Kirk and Spock sitting there with a three-dimensional chess.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm fighting on level one, and you're on two, and then all of a sudden, somebody jumps to three. But Mike was just talking about when he was a major, he didn't make lieutenant colonel, so they want you out.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, from a concerned taxpayer. To a country that looks to be friggin' broke to me, let me get this straight. You have a serious value. You've got 20 years experience. Make that 20 years minus 3 months. Everybody knows they need you. Yet they kick you out, pay you, and then you come back being paid by somebody else. So now they're paying essentially 2.5 times for the same guy. Does this make any kind of sense to you, Mike, or am I just being goofier?
You know, it goes to your point about the pregnant woman, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the same sort of logic. It just doesn't make much sense. The Brits, if they see value in a people, in a person, they continue to serve, and they will eventually retire as a major or even a captain. But you know, they feel that they're good enough, so they retain them. So that's the way the Brits were. And the Germans, I think, were kind of the same way. I'm not quite certain about that. But
what do you guys make of? I mean, when you look, I mean, I think I believe that the Constitution is out of all the documents that have ever been written, maybe the Declaration of Independence, the Magna Carta, and maybe the Bible.
You guys go there, isn't a captain lower than a? What did you say, Mike?
Captain's lower than a major.
Yes, in the Army, a captain is lower than a major. But for instance, in the Navy, a captain is an 06, so that's the equivalent of a colonel in the Army. So it depends on the service. That's all.
There is no major in the Navy, right?
No, there is not.
So Hal, did you make captain?
No, I was. I was Frocky 6 when I got out.
What does that mean?
I was wearing the chevrons of an E6, but I wasn't being paid.
But you were. But how does the nuclear training and stuff, does that land anywhere other than you landed on that ship?
Well, I did nuclear power school in Orlando, Florida, after I did nuclear field A school, after boot camp, and then I went to Idaho Falls, Idaho, where I trained on the number 3 engine room of the USS Enterprise when it was a prototype engine room. You can actually see the hull of the ship, and you had the mock-up shafts going through it. But we did we had a dump condenser out there that simulated flight ops, so it was pretty slick. And then I did really well there in power school in Orlando, in prototype training in Idaho, that I got picked up for staff duty. So I didn't go to the ship until I was in my fourth or fifth year.
Well, how did coming out? Did you go to Great Lakes?
Well, I went to a boot camp in Orlando. School is down in Orlando. Nuclear power school is in Orlando. It's all gone now. It's all a development now. And then prototype was in the on-hands training portion, not the theory part, but the on-hands part. That was in Idaho Falls, Idaho, Saratoga Springs, New York, Groton, Connecticut, or South Carolina. And I think the only one that remains is South Carolina.
Well, there's 100 guys doing jumping jacks on the beach. How'd they pull you out and say you look like a nuclear guy?
Well, I tested, even though I didn't have chemistry or physics in high school, I took algebra 2, and I was always good at math. So when I tested, I tested really high, and I think my ASVAB was like 93%, 93rd percentile. And then my nuke test, if I didn't make it in the nuclear power program, I wasn't going to join the Navy, but I did well in the nuke test, even though I didn't have chemistry or physics in high school, and that was it. You know, if it wasn't for nuclear power school, I wouldn't.
Were you one of those people that the government is worried about before because you were messing around with nuclear stuff?
he was designing the flamethrower dog.
Yeah, we better hire this guy before.
Same sort of thing allegedly happened to my father when he went in World War II. He tested way high, so they put him in a signal corps. He was radios and everything else. So yeah. they've always sort of had a process to weed people up or down, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they have. Yeah. If he didn't score, I don't remember what the cutoff was, but if you didn't score sufficiently high on the nuke test, you weren't put into the program. And then you also got washed out pretty quick too, if I remember. I mean,
how did you choose Navy? How did you choose Army, Mike?
Blade had enlisted in the Army also, so we visited together down in Florida when I was down there, and he didn't really talk me into it, but it was a pretty good picture that he painted, and it's just what I. And when I took my Army test, the ASVAB, or it's probably used for all the services, I scored sufficiently high so that. And I wanted to learn another language, so they gave me German. So that's why I joined the Army at the time.
Yeah, nice.
Well, he became a psychologist. Dr. Blade, you're just plain Mike. You're not Dr. Mike.
No, not at all.
So just.
But Blade was a medic in the Army, Tom. So that's.
Oh, really?
That was the skill that he. Yeah, he went to. He was at San Antonio, which is the big medic training. That's where they trained the medics, and that's what he did.
I think
he was using it to get the GI Bill, and he got the GI Bill, and that's how he ended up getting his doctor.
I think the lady who was on last week, Mary Kelly, was she on with you, Greg? I think she said that that's, out of all the VAs, the San Antonio has the huge burn unit. Is that what she said?
Yeah, well, that's because of, there's an Army hospital in San Antonio.
Yeah, it's one.
And that's the big burn unit, yes.
But I think it's attached to the VA there, too, somehow.
The VA probably has a presence, and they might farm people to whatever that Army hospital is. Jean knows the name of it, but she's upstairs.
Yeah, and I think that's what Murray was saying, is that they... Diane, sorry. If it's a burn issue, that's where they... Yeah, we were talking a little bit. Mike was on yesterday that some of the stuff is sort of imbalanced in where people in the Army come from, in the armed forces. And I used to notice it when we were in Afghanistan or Iraq even. I mean, you never saw anybody here. If you pick up the paper, you never saw anything. But if you went to my relatives in Columbus, my Italian side... And, of course, I'm up early Sunday morning for anybody else. So I grab the paper, start reading. There's always two or three units from around Columbus that are going to Iraq, going to Afghanistan, some coming back. It's a whole different world. And I won't say Columbus is a small town, but compared to Chicago, it is. And then I read somewhere that only like 11% of all the people in the armed forces come from the big cities. And she was saying, that's one of the reasons why they have this Fisher House. Where she said, if you take a cross, like a church cross, you draw it from Wisconsin down to New Orleans, and then across the middle of the country, most of your armed services come within like 500 miles of that cross, not from the coast. So
that was my experience. Yeah.
And she said that's why you need this Fisher House for relatives and so forth, because if somebody's getting a new leg or something else, and they're probably from like Danville. And they're coming to Chicago, the veterans' home, to get it all done, and somebody's coming with them, they need a place to stay. Mm-hmm. It's not like everybody's, from Chicago. Why do you need a place to stay? You're 10 miles from home. And a lot of it's geographic, and I guess I would not have guessed that, but that's why it's so great talking to you guys, because these are issues that nobody would ever think of unless you look at it and you say, well, that sort of makes sense. I did not realize till today that they had that they tried to muster you out. I mean, aren't there like a bunch of...
They don't try to muster you out, Tom. You're either in or out.
Oh, they kick you out. by the way, bend over, here it comes. How long did they give you? A month?
And here's another thing. And when Hal was talking, he said he was frocked into his E6 position. And I bet you when you were frocked, Hal, you did not get E6 pay, or did you get E6 pay?
No, I didn't. I wasn't getting E6 pay yet, yeah.
What does frock mean? What does frock mean?
So you, were you on a promotion list, Hal?
Yeah, you make the rate. When you pass the test, they frock you, and then, I don't know why they use the word frock.
What does that mean? Identify you?
They identify you as E6, but then you don't get paid for it for like 6 months. But I was rolling out. I wasn't going to stay in.
Well, how many years were you in?
It's almost 6 years. Yeah, okay. We went through decommissioning my last year.
Right, so 6 years doesn't get you a pension, does it?
No, huh? No. In my experience in the nuclear Navy, I kind of got the feeling when I was aboard ship that the guys that liked being underway, didn't mind being away from home, didn't mind not being married, not having kids. The ones that really didn't work very hard, let's be honest, they're the ones that kind of like wanted to stay in the nuclear program. Whereas the guys that worked really hard and were ambitious and probably in terms of knowledge, probably on average a little higher than the ones that stayed in, they're the ones that were exiting to go work in the private sector. That's at least my experience in the nuclear Navy. Because, in the nuclear Navy, we all felt like we were way underpaid. I think at one point in the Navy, I was calculating my average pay per hour. It was like 70 cents an hour. Because we're working 5-hour nuclear power plant watches, 3 times a day, sometimes twice a day. Like every other day was 10 hours of watch or 15 hours of watch. And then we had an 8-hour work day. And then we were in the engine room for nuclear engineering drills every other day while we're underway. And then we were doing damage control drills on the other days. So I was getting about maybe an hour and a half of sleep a night while we're underway. It was just brutal. Well,
how does anybody, even young and in shape, how do you exist on that?
You know, the funny thing is, you don't know what you can do until you're asked to do it, right? Boot camp. I actually thought boot camp was the funnest part of my enlistment. I love boot camp. But you don't really know what you're going to do. I mean, I was running 3 miles in boondockers and dungarees in boot camp, you know, 3 miles. I didn't think I'd ever be doing that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I did a tour of the battleship New Jersey. I don't know if you guys have ever, you've probably been on some, but it's, if you're ever in Philadelphia, actually, I don't know if you can do it, Mike, now, because I think it's in dry dock. They're fixing it up, but it'll be back, right? It's pretty spectacular. I mean, down on the bottom, when you first walk in, when you first come aboard, there's this huge, you know, captain's quarters, where you actually could put an admiral in there, and it's this really nice spot with a big table and all this stuff. And
yeah, he has his own cook. He has carpeting.
Well, he has all that. Plus, he has every, I don't know if it worked its way down the chain, but every battleship had china and silver or something donated by Tiffany's or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really neat, but whenever he's underway, he doesn't stay there. There's a little spot off the bridge that's basically the tiniest little sink, the tiniest toilet, and a cot. That's where the guy's at whenever the thing's... How the hell do you get any sleep up there, for God's sake?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you're right next to where everything's going on. Plus, you're high enough upward. I think probably tossing around. Those guys probably don't care about that. But
well, the enlisted guys are below the waterline.
Yeah.
They have sunshine. And we got like 50 guys in the room the size of a living room.
Well,
living together.
Well, the very front part, they took us to where, in the bow, you're way up front, and there's this room, and all of a sudden I look around, it looked like something out of the Star Trek, the Borg, where, like, people are in drawers. There's like 13 or 15 guys in this room, and I'm going,
yeah,
this is the part of the ship that goes up and down all the time. Who the hell wants to be here?
It gets moving, man.
Do you ever get used to it?
Oh, you do. Yeah, I remember laying in my pit when I first, we called it a pit, the thing that you sleep in. It's like 6'2" and about 2.5 feet wide and about two feet tall. And when I first started sleeping in it, I'd have nightmares, and I'd wake up and I'd bang my head into that fluorescent light that's right above my head. And I had these marks on my forehead for the first month I was on the ship. And then I got used to it, and I never woke up and banged my head on that thing ever again. But yeah, it's tight.
Well, Mike, you know our buddy Doc, well, he and somehow or other they were in Washington, and Tully knew Tom Tully, a friend of Doc's, and been a big kind of mover and shaker here in Chicago. Well, real nice guy. Somehow or other they got a gig where they could land on this aircraft carrier, just to tour it. And he said they were there for like maybe 2-3 hours getting a tour. He says first landed on the thing, even in like a prop job where, you know, you're not in a fighter jet or anything. He goes, the thing looks like a postage stamp on the water, even though the thing is huge. He says, then you land. He goes, there's like 10,000 people here. There's planes going off, and there's you know, every time something goes off, a siren. He goes, how the hell do you get any sleep on this thing? But I guess you sort of.
You get tired enough, Tom. You sleep anywhere.
Were you ever like out in a tent somewhere and stuff? Did you ever have to do that, field stuff?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yes, I was in a tent. Whenever you went to the field, you were in tents usually.
Like, what was it, like MASH?
Not quite like MASH, but I mean, we didn't have a still.
I was going to say, did you have a still?
No, but when I went to Somalia, we were in tents. Grenada, we were in a former dormitory there. So, but you know, we always had tents. We deployed with tents usually.
Well, my mom said my dad was in the South Pacific. He was a pretty clever fellow, supposedly. Said he had the cot. He said he took all the sheets and stuff off because there was nothing but bugs. So he got 4 coffee cans and dumped and put the legs in the coffee cans and filled them up with oil. So the bugs that come up over the top of the coffee can, they'd all die in the oil before they made it to the bed.
Right. Well, that's a good idea.
I've heard guys grabbing 4 praying mantises and tying them to the legs of the bed.
Well, I mean, we had mosquito netting too, you know, when we went to Somalia, so...
I'll bet that didn't work real well.
Oh, it worked okay. At least you wouldn't get... it was adequate, let's put it that way.
Oh God, I can bet you couldn't wait to get out of there.
No, that wasn't the most pleasant assignment, that's for sure.
Oh God. What?
Well, hey, when I was in, our distilling plant broke, and we had 500 souls on our ship, and we had water rationing, and so for the 2 or 3 weeks that the distilling plant was down, nobody could take a shower. So you can imagine what it smelled like on that ship.
Oh God.
We were in the Persian Gulf, and the seawater temperature was 93 degrees, and that's what's cool.
Yeah, I bet it was nasty.
Yeah, that's what was cool on the ship. We had no air conditioning. And the 93 degree water, Gulf water, was cooling the ship. So it was hot. It was seriously hot.
Well, then it brings up the age old question: if everybody stinks, does anybody stink?
it stunk bad, but you got used to it.
Well, one of my Fed buddies, kind of a character. He's been on the show, although we didn't let anybody know he's from the Fed. He was doing a couple of conferences for the Fed, and he was big on racking up his miles, right? Of course, sometimes you wonder about you economist dudes. Sorry, Hal. He flies from here to Germany somewhere, did a conference there, and then he wanted to fly to Hong Kong, but he didn't want to come back this way. He wanted to go around the world, right? So he lands in, like, Tel Aviv or someplace. Then they take a plane across, I don't know if they went across Russia or China or what they did, but he went from there to Hong Kong, that direction. And he says to me, I noticed when I get on the plane in Tel Aviv going the other way, it was obvious that I was like the only person that maybe had seen a shower in the last couple hours. and I said, okay, you got to answer me this question. How long did you smell everybody? And he said, half hour, 45 minutes after that. You kind of got used to it.
Yeah.
But then here's a scary question from an economist, Hal. Don't put yourself in this case. He goes, how come I didn't get 25,000 miles? And I go, John, you didn't fly around the equator, you idiot. Oh, yeah. you know, if you walk around the North Pole, you don't get 25,000. he was serious. I'm going, duh. He got like, what do you get, like 15 or 12,000 or something. You know, he's like halfway up from the equator. But he said, yeah, nobody.
Well, economists should know that because airline flights are optimized, right?
Yeah.
Shortest path.
All right, I got the accountant. Well, next time we'll talk about how you get from a nuclear engineer to an economist, but somehow you did. What do you make of, let's just say, the market right now? And I'm cheering the fact that it's up. My clients had a nice day yesterday after like four nice days in a row, so I'm sure as hell not being bad about it. But somehow this combination of everybody putting money in their 401k every week, which is by the way a beautiful thing, or an IRA at PTI, I mean it's a beautiful thing for us and for everybody. This relentless investing, this relentless pushing stuff up, the relentless no matter what the price is, go. And even when you look at some things, and again I'm not doing any sort of investment advice here, but I was looking at Nvidia yesterday. I'm not going to give you the numbers. Just do it yourself. Look at the revenue per share and look at the earnings per share, and you sit there. Now, granted, the place is growing real fast, but how fast does it have to grow to work into those numbers? I don't think anybody even cares. You know? And you've got now these meme stocks. Those stocks don't make any money. Most of them don't, and yet they're going up by 300-400% a day. Some of them.
Well, the price to earnings on Nvidia is 80.
The last quarter, but the revenue is. I usually look at the revenue per share part, because the earnings is one thing. If you're growing, I don't care if the PE is is 500, but the revenue. How are you going to triple the revenue of the place? That's the part I look at.
Good news, it's up $7 pre-market.
Yeah. And I've got it essentially. The revenue is $36 per share or something. So it's whatever. It's that's insane. I mean, their margin is huge. Their margin is like, what, 40% or something? Which is really something. But, I mean, what is...
They make like $4 or $4 or so per quarter.
The last quarter, yeah. But I'm saying, but then again, which one do you use? But I guess my question is, are we... If we passed a law where nobody could ever sell, you could only buy, does that mean we're all rich someday, Hal? I mean, what is What do people think of this? This relentless wealth growing for some people, I think that if something, I don't want it to happen. If something happened, then all these stocks were half of what they are. Not some of them. Some of them make a lot of dough, and then you wonder why they're so cheap. So the market's kind of weird that way. But if some of these stocks were half their price, you looked at them, you wouldn't say, God, I got to buy this thing. But now all of a sudden, everything is judged. How is this happening? Is it just because, real quick story, because we'll run over a little bit here because I got the boat of you guys. I had somebody came in, we used to do seminars all the time, and always I would ask just to get a feel for the crowd. I'd say, okay, what is there here on a Saturday morning? One guy, hand fires up. I'm here because you're the guy who's going to teach me how to be short this market. I said, you don't like the market. Now, of course, the market was a third of where it is now. And guy goes, no, I mean, I'm so bearish, I can taste it. And I said, all right, well, if you don't mind my asking, what does your portfolio look like now? It's cash right now because you're going to teach me how to be short this market using, you know, put spreads. Well, who knows? I didn't even know what I was going to say. And I said, okay, but that's all you have is cash. You have no 401k, you got no IRA. I got a real big 401k and a pretty good size IRA. I said, okay, now what do you have in there? Well, that's not what I'm talking about. Okay, but wait a minute. What do you have in there? He says, well, I'm basically balls out long. And I said, so let me get this straight. You're so bearish you can taste it, yet you're 100% long, and last week you were buying stock, but you're bearish. Oh, you can't look at it that way. What do you mean I can't look at it that way? I mean, do people not even know that every week they're an investor? I mean, I look at the market, Alan, Mike, every afternoon. If you're Vanguard or somebody, and you're the 401k person for General Motors, every afternoon or every paycheck, people are just dumping money on your desk that you have to invest. Yeah. And you don't care what the price is. Your job is just to invest it and collect your 0.3%, and you're the happiest clam on earth. I mean, have we institutionalized this buying to the point that someday if there ever is a correction, it's going to be even worse or what?
Well, I think the recent moves are a result of, I think, what I see is bad economic news. Because when the economic news is bad, that means people are believing the Fed is going to cut rates and grow the money supply even faster. So, you know, today you had retail sales come in at what I consider a low number, 3% year over year. When you take out inflation, that's a 0.5% at worst.
That's being generous.
Yeah. 0.5. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, retail sales are declining. And I think what people are thinking is the Fed's going to have to, you know, prevent this recession that's coming, and they're going to have to lower interest rates and jack up the M2. And I think it's what people are trading on right now.
Well, I agree. We're going to have to dash. One quick question for Mike. I mean, Mike, I know you're not just a guy from the Army, because I was in class with you, and you know a lot of this stuff. When you showed up, anyway, I had to get that one in there. What do you make of, like, a COVID when we were in essentially a depression, if you counted anything, right, Hal? And yet the market went up the whole way. I mean, people have actually been taught, strangely, that if the economy goes down, the market goes up. But what do you think of that lesson, Mike? This is just as a regular citizen.
I just think it's kind of, well, whether it's ass backwards or not, Tom. You know, I really don't. I can't explain it. But there was too much easy money during COVID, and that's probably why the market just continued to go up.
Yeah.
But that's another story for another time.
Well, hey,
I don't understand why.
Thank you, guys. I found this a lot of fun this morning, you two guys being on here, because I learned five or six facts I never knew, and that's why I love doing this show. I mean, I'd want to have my little camera, if I know how to use it, on my phone. The day, Hal, you walked out of the Navy, looked in the mirror, and said, "I'm going to be an economist." What the hell happened? What the hell happened on that day? Was that like, what was the was it like Belushi when the sun came through the thing, when the nun kicked him down the stairs? I've seen the light.
It was not on my radar at all. I didn't know what economics was.
so what happened? You got the light from the nun, or what?
I took calculus 1, 2, and 3 for fun, and then that led me to graduate school. And I took mathematical economics, and I learned what a negative eigenvalue means in my economics class. And I was like, I need to get a PhD in economics.
Good Lord. You ever talk to anybody quite like Hal, Mike?
No, I mean, I ended up feeling my way into the intelligence field, Tom. I wouldn't have thought that I'd be in intelligence when I was at Notre Dame, but that's what ended up happening. So
you might have got a few other votes on that, not just you, by the way. On you not being in intelligence.
Okay.
Actually, Mike was always a lot of fun. He didn't really like class all that much, but when he went there, pretty bright dude. We used to go together, and I tell you what, Mike, we had a nice time. I mean, you wouldn't be friends with people for that many years if you didn't have a nice time. So
yeah.
We did. Anyway, we're gonna head off to Dan here in a second. Thank you, guys, because we'll talk what we're doing with fixed income and so forth with Dan, because these interest rates have been creeping down to 10-year. We'll be right back. We'll be like a 30-second break and bring back Dan Janitas.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Well, that's supposed to be all-time high playing. I'm not sure what's going on.
Well, maybe we should ask the producer. What about you? Are the producer?
Wait a minute. I am the producer. Yeah, not sure what happened.
Well, what was the movie? You Are the something something?
Actually, wait. Maybe I can try it in a different browser.
You're Jack Nicholson. I am the bleeping Shore Patrol. Remember? Five Easy Pieces?
Yeah.
No, it was the other one. It was Last Detail.
I can't believe it.
Anyway, do we have Dan?
Yeah.
All right, we'll use it on the next break. We're trying to get a song. There we go. Dan, you remember this movie and this lady? Dan, like every male, I gotta believe that you would have loved to spend some time with Rita Coolidge.
Uh huh.
The voice was just part of it. What an incredible lady. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
That was a pretty good movie. Who was your favorite Bond girl, and has it changed over time?
Oh, geez. If you're talking about classics, you mean like Marilyn Monroe, maybe?
No, the Bond girl.
Oh, Bond, he said. Bond.
Yeah.
Ah. I'm drawing a blank.
Wow, how about you, Greg?
Jaws.
Jeez. Oh, the...
Or you're talking girls or villains?
The girls.
Girls? I don't know. All of them.
Bond movies.
All of them at the same time.
Well, there you go. I was always very partial to Danielle Bianchi and From Russia with Love.
Oh, yeah.
But then as I've aged, I kind of like Maude Adams. Well, it really wasn't a bad one. You can't really say you didn't like Ursula Andress or Jane Seymour or any of them, for God's sake.
Yeah.
It was quite a group. Honor Blackman, remember her? She was Pussy Galore, remember?
Got it in the other browser.
Yeah.
Sorry.
God, man. So, here we are in the market, Dan, at an all-time high. What do you think? The floor is all yours. We we have people buying, nobody selling. Why would you ever sell? The Fed, if we can keep this, we might have a rate cut for the next 20 years. What's the market going to be? 150,000 or what?
Yeah, I think we're in a, we're definitely in a somewhat Goldilocks environment right now, and there's no question that the say the overall picture is looking very, very good. However, I will say that there's definitely some cracks in the system. You know, the there's certainly been a slowdown in consumer sentiment. There's been a softness in retail sales. There's been a couple of really interesting developments, and it's taken longer than I think we believe, or that strategists believe it would happen. And one of those developments, which is something I've been saying for quite some time, is wage inflation. So one of the concerns that we had prior to the pandemic was that the last part of inflation that we hadn't seen was wage inflation. And then suddenly we got it. And then the people who were talking transitory made no sense to me at all, because once you have wage inflation, it's very sticky. So we had this supply-demand situation in the employment picture where companies couldn't hire people. They were having to pay more. They were having to offer remote work long after it was necessary to have remote work. That is starting to change, and that is what we've started to see over the last few weeks. We're seeing layoffs. We're seeing a lot more return to work. We're seeing less in the way of wage increases, less in the way of, you know, trying to attract good talent with higher pay. And so this is now, so it's now starting to work. So the higher rates are now coming in the system. And as the prior guest was saying, you know, all this money that was pumped into the system, both from the corporate tax cuts as well as the COVID money, that is quite a bit out there. And again, remember, baby boomers have the lion's share of the wealth. They've accumulated the wealth both in their retirement plans as well as in their homes. So we have all this wealth out there that's going to continue to drive the market forward, whether or not the fundamentals agree. So that's where we're at. I think the slowdown is starting. The cracks are definitely there. We're seeing delinquency rates on credit cards pick up. It doesn't mean we're going into a recession. It just means that the higher rate environment is starting to work, and it's starting to get us back into that equilibrium that we need to be. People will continue to put money in their favorite stocks going forward because they have money and because they believe in it. And generally, as you know, Chief, that people have made money in a particular market, so they'll continue to move forward thinking, oh, we just made money, so that means we're going to continue to make money. And as we know, that's not the case. You got to look at every investment from today going forward, not look at what happened in the past and not ride that momentum. At least we don't ride the momentum, because you don't want to get stuck at some point when there is a downturn, and it usually happens quickly.
I'm going to do something unusual here, Dan, in that I'm going to pick on you instead of me, because I believe everything you just said I agree with. Okay, now that's, so anybody, say, over the age of 50 looks at what it was in CNBC, yes, I should have saved the article. Maybe Greg can find it. Something about cracks and something. And it was all about all these people getting laid off. The amount of people getting laid off in the last 3 weeks is astronomical everywhere. I mean, everywhere you look, there was a layoff the last 4 or 5 days. Talk about retail sales. Talk about even the Home Depot last year, this year over last year, revenue was down. I mean, I got to believe, a minimum 8 to 10%. Increase in prices at Home Depot, which, if you're legitimate, you say, wait a minute, this is starting to happen here. You talk about, you know, Nancy talking about how some of your, even people are not even remodeling as much as they were, plus the housing stuff, the prices are up and people can't move because of this and that. Now, I'm going to say, okay, Dan, you're over 50 like me, so I'm going to treat you like I'm in the mirror. I'm going to be a guy 25. So to bleep what? So it means my stock, instead of being 100 times earnings, is going to be 105. Who gives a crap? I'm still buying it. Because all it does is go up. And if it ever starts to go down, the Fed's going to put more money in. And by the way, it's still going to go up. What's the matter with you? Now, right. Instead of saying that to myself, I'm asking you.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's there's a what I refer to as sort of momentum in the market. There's also a learning curve that I think a lot of younger investors and older investors need to understand, because we've been away from the environment of, you know, we've been away from the cyclicality in the market for so long, and now there's been a, you know, whether it's 100 times or 105 times, as you're saying, it almost doesn't matter for most investors. They're just looking at upside. They're looking at AI. They're looking at NVIDIA. They're looking at whatever the hot name is. And they have cash. That's the most important thing, that there is cash to continue to put into the market. So the leveling off is starting to happen, but hasn't quite happened yet. So this rally that we're seeing, I think, is going to continue. I think investors are going to continue to pay more than they should on the equity side. And I think, you know, this is, as we've been saying for months, is the perfect time to be taking some of that off the top, not 100% of it necessarily, but take 10, 15, 50% of what you've earned, realize that, and then lock it in with some protected program like yours, or with fixed income that's still giving you 5.5%, especially in this environment. We know that at some point rates are going to go down, so you're going to actually get more than that 5.5%. So this, everybody that asks me the question, friends, clients, they'll all say, you know, I put this money in this stock, and what do you think of it? I says, I think it's time to trim. And trim, again, means just start, you know, the stock is overvalued. Only bad things could happen if we have a shakeup in the economy, if we have some geopolitical news, if we have further news from further concerns from the election, the upcoming election. There's going to be a lot of mudslinging going on in the next few months, and it's going to catch the attention of some investors. And so I do think that volatility is going to continue. If you, you know, if you're in the market, I would not pay 105 times. I would take that extra 5% and save it. Sell it and put it into a 5.5% T-bill, or put it into a protected program. It's not the time to be greedy.
Dan, what I'm finding, and I, as you know, I have a couple new commercials on and everything, I really do believe it's time for somebody, even if they don't, you know, the second want to do something. The world has gotten pretty strange, even in opening up an account and stuff at places. I mean, I think that a lot of people should at least, you know, of course, I don't want everybody, to be perfectly blunt. Well, I mean, we'll take anybody who wants to trade their own stuff through Interactive Brokers or something, but in terms of, for me, managing their stuff, or you, we want, you know, people that we can help, right? And right. So, I mean, I think for people to not have at least that option, in the sense of having an account set up or something, to where if you decide you want to do something, it's getting harder and harder to set up accounts in places with all the investigations and, you know, checking you out through Interpol and all the other stuff you have to do for people. It's really not. But I get this, if I talk to somebody and I say, you know, especially if it's an institutional account or something, I said, you know, not only if you want us to trade long only for you, we can do that. You know, we probably use indexes instead of stocks, but still, we're pretty good at that. By the way, that's easy compared to doing protective stuff. Or if you want some of it protected, or by the way, I happen to know this guy who's like really good, and who's kind of affiliated, not kind of, is affiliated of Dan. If you want to put, you know, 40% over with Dan Janitas, or 20 or 30, whatever you want to do, we can do all that for you. And you know what, Dan? Everybody agrees that it's a pretty good idea. Just not this week. I'll let you know. I'm going to get the memo. Exactly. I'm going to get the memo. It's not like, you know, and they'll say, I'm going to do this. Now, it's a month later, the market, now yesterday. Nobody's going to call us after yesterday.
Yes.
Yet.
Yeah.
But my warning is, if we ever go the other way, you can't all of a sudden do something in an instant. I mean, when we first started the business, we could open an account in an hour. That ship has sailed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
absolutely. The lead time is long. The transfer time is longer. Even though we have technology, there are a lot of checks in the system now that by the time that check or that cash actually hits your account, it could be a week or longer. So there's definitely there's definitely that risk, and there's also liquidity risk that's going to start happening as well on the equity side, especially in the small cap space. as you know, things turn very quickly, having lived through 87 and you know, the early 90s and the late 90s and so forth, that when there is a turn, it happens quickly. So being well positioned ahead of time makes sense. And the thing also, Chief, about being well positioned, it's not like you're earning zero like you were 10 years ago.
No, no.
You're earning 5.5 to 7%. I mean, it's just parking, it's just diversifying, it's diversification. I've had the discussion with many people recently, and friends included, who are married to a certain stock. In fact, I thought initially when you were playing the love song there, it was like somebody fall in love with the market.
Well, the market's at an all-time high, right?
Yeah, so why not? I mean, you gotta love it, right? But I do think that part of our job is what we call risk management, and that's basically making sure that you're well diversified and that you're not getting too attached to the momentum, and you're not getting too attached to a name or a story, because as we know, those names and those stories change very quickly, and if you're in the tech space, they change even more rapidly. Technology is changing. It doesn't mean that the companies don't have good ideas and good and services and products and offerings and all that, but they're all not going to be winners. It's going to be those companies that are well managed.
Dan, have you reached the point where if you see somebody's a new client's portfolio, you can tell what TV station they watch?
Pretty much.
isn't that scary?
That's terrific.
The thing, you know, honestly, we talk about, you and I have seen markets go up and go down. And obviously, this week, nobody really wants to hear a hell of a lot about it could go the other way, because all it does is go up. But normally, have you ever been? Have you ever seen a normal time in the market? In other words, if this is, I won't say normal, but the traditional issue thing is, if somebody came in to any firm, I don't care if it's Merrill Lynch, you know, I don't care, Fisher Investments, PTI, you name it. Notice how I made myself as big as Merrill Lynch. We're not really. If somebody who's, I'm going to say, retired.
Because Merrill Lynch is out of business.
Yeah, well, that's true. We hung in there. They didn't. If somebody comes in and you know, you're almost like a, well, they don't have general practitioners anymore either, but if you walk in and you're seeing a new doctor, if you walk in and sit down and look at him in the face, you almost don't even have to tell a guy whether you're sick or not. He already knows by the way you walk, by the way you sit, and by the look in your eye and your coloring, right? I mean, a good doctor will. He may not know what's wrong with you, but he can tell whether you're healthy or not just by looking at you, pretty much. So normally, if somebody, I'm talking 25 years ago, was 80 and was, or 75 or something, in other words, not working, retired, and had virtually all their, maybe their house paid for, and all their, you know, and their money is in investments, you could sort of assume that, you know, the ratio was probably 35-40% fixed income, maybe another 20 or 25% in I won't say solid stocks, but income producing stocks, and maybe if the guy was a wild card, 30 or 40% in like other stocks, something along those lines. So there was probably a 60% buffer of some kind, you know, being the fixed income and being the stocks that pay dividends and probably aren't going to move as much, doesn't mean they can't, as the other ones. But now everybody over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years has been pushed out on this risk curve to a place where they traditionally shouldn't be, let's put it that way.
Right.
So, I mean, I have 75-year-old people, not every day, but they're 95% in five stocks that are maybe the seven stocks that are going up. And they've done very well with it. But they're out on the end of the plank. I mean, I'm not saying that for the next 2 or 3 years or 5 years that's not going to be the place to be, because it sure has been the last five, right? But it's just, it doesn't match up with, shall we say, traditional risk stuff for somebody of that age and income. Now if the person is 30, making 150 grand a year or 200, and it's his first investment and says, I want to put it all on Apple, here's 20 grand, hey, knock yourself out. I buy him 25 grand Apple. What's the difference? Right? But I'm saying people's portfolios now do not match the, quote, traditional protection slash income of the age bracket they're in. And that has me the most worried of anything. Am I goofy here or no?
No, and it's time horizon as well.
Yeah.
Because time horizon is shortened as you get older. Unless you're planning on leaving a legacy, you want to live off of that money. You want to enjoy the money also that you've worked hard for over the years. And I hate to see people use it or a fair amount of it in just a couple of stocks that they, this, as I mentioned, this is the time to trim. Going back to the original comment that I made about some cracks in the system, and I'm thinking about that movie The Big Short, where prior to the mortgage crisis, and you can start seeing some of this, and for whatever reason it all seems to begin here in Florida. Some of the cracks that we're seeing here in Florida, besides the credit card delinquencies that you're seeing nationally, are the higher cost of auto insurance, the much higher cost of homeowners insurance, the much higher cost of HOA fees that are actually driving a lot of people out and driving prices down. And there are places that people can go. There are alternatives. You can substitute. However, the bubble that we've seen is clear as day here in South Florida, and it's clear as day in other parts of the country as well. But we're seeing a fair number of people leave, affordability issue with just making your monthly payments because your HOA fees have gone up so much. We're also seeing certain types of regulation that have stepped in, certain types of whether they be building codes that are costing condo owners large assessments. This type of activity is only going to get worse. So it's just starting now, and I don't see anything that's going to help that. I don't see any improvement on the insurance front. I don't see any improvement on the cost front when it comes to services, especially when it comes to housing. So there is talk for the first time that we're seeing some cracks in the housing market. There's been a lot of talk that we might see it, but there's actually evidence now that we're seeing it.
What I guess every time we talk about this, Dan, now there's two questions. One is, I agree with you on that. The second is, from the COVID and all the other stuff we've seen, when does that come close to affecting the price of Nvidia or Meta?
I think part of it is sentiment, right? So a lot of these people, we're talking about people who are in retirement age that watch their accounts every day, like my dad, looks at it every single day, even though most of his account is in very conservative investments. He likes watching the account value go up. But
Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Right, of course. That's why we're in the business we're in. But it's going to be those same people that are going to say, now I have to pay more for my HOA fee. Well, wait a minute, the insurance, it's doubled in the last year. And even though they have the means to pay it, they're still seeing when they start getting, their personal balance sheet, if you will, and their personal budget starts changing, that's when they're going to start putting start connecting the dots and realizing that this could have a larger impact, and it will have a larger impact. And it's not, there's nothing wrong with it having a larger impact. It's just part of the cycle that we're coming into. Not a recession, just a slowdown.
But Dan, I'll give you one really stupid example and one not so stupid example. How do even guys like us, who our job is to watch for all the crap that's happening and protect our people, or at least do the best we can, because that's not their job. They're operating on people during the day, and we're managing the money. We're not trying to operate, and they're not trying to manage their money, right? I mean, that's the deal we're making. When I was very young in the industry, when I was at Pullman, Bank America was always trying to get higher up. Pullman, for a smaller firm, I hope people, I'm not going out on a limb here, but for a smaller firm, they actually did a lot of, in other words, in terms of total revenue, if you looked at their revenue, it looked like they were huge, but they really weren't. I mean, obviously, they had Trammobile, they had places, it was a big company, but because of certain things they did, like if they were going to put up a power plant in like Saudi or someplace, Pullman would run the entire plant through their balance sheet, because they would get the loan for these guys through the Import-Export Bank. This is what my friend Robin, who died earlier this year, in the Treasury Department there, and that's why I learned some of this. It's pretty fascinating, Dan. So their fee for the engineering and construction from Kellogg, which became Kellogg Brown and Root, might have been, you know, $10 million or some number over the 5-year production. But the entire part of the power plant, which might have been $200 million or 150, went through Pullman's income statement, even though it just got pushed right back out again to the contractors, right? So they looked like they were a lot bigger than they were, but there was a lot of work the Treasury there did. So they had 10 banks in their, what do you call the group that lends them money, what's the term? Nobody has just one bank. Syndicate. There's a lead bank, there's syndicate. So syndicate. People were always trying to move up the syndicate, right? So one night, Robin gets invited to go see Anthony Quinn, Fiddler on the Roof, so she drags me with, you know, suit and tie deal. We go to this incredible dinner in the Sears Tower. Of course, we're in the 70 or 80th floor with the big view. Of course, it was foggy, so I couldn't see anything. We get on the buses, we go over to, there was booze on the bus, everything, see Anthony Quinn and Fiddler on the Roof. Anyway, it's spectacular. Well, 2 years later, I'm on the trading floor. We go to play softball against Bank America, and they had to borrow a bat and 2 balls for warm-ups. They didn't have uniforms. We did. I'm thinking, what's with this bank? Turn out, like, the next week, the bank, like, went down by, like, 50% or something. You know, but that's just kind of a goofy story. But in 2007, early in the year, it was one of my clients. He's a PTI client, but he's my brother more than me, and he and this guy are pretty tight. He had $1 million in one of these Bear Stearns, evidently off-balance sheet investments in mortgages or something. This was early 2000, like a solid 10 months to a year before anything happened. And all of a sudden, this thing goes tapo. And my brother told me about it. He didn't, you know, the guy's a real sharp dude, and we're not going to quiz the guy on what exactly he was in or anything. He just made kind of the offhand comment that this thing I did with Bear Stearns is worth nothing. But I didn't, it's not my place or yours or my brother's to call up and say, hey, wait a minute, what were you in? How'd you get screwed up on this thing? What was its connection to Bear Stearns? We didn't do any of that. And yet it never crossed my mind that Bear Stearns might have like 20 of these things out there, and in a year they're toast. And I don't know why would ever put something like that together after a firm's been around that long and has a pretty good reputation, I think. And yet there's signs there. What's going to be the sign today or next week or next year or 10 years from now or 100 years from now that somehow or another the market is going to reconnect with maybe an economy that's not doing so hot? What's going to give us the 2-week heads up? Because we're not going to get it. Somebody in Washington's going to get it. That's today we're all going to sell it. We're not going to get that memo. What should we be looking for? To not only that maybe the economy's slowing down a little bit, that all of a sudden the market's going to care.
I think one of the things is you know, kind of going back to a term that we haven't used recently, but we were using for quite a bit, is affordability. And you know, affordability is what we're seeing in the high prices and the high valuations of the stocks. Still, the high prices and high valuations of homes. Still, the high prices of food and goods and services. And there's a point where that cracks when the cost side or the expense side of your balance sheet is starting to rise so rapidly that, you know, you don't have that free cash or that extra cash now to buy those things. So this is one of the things that we're starting to see that is real. It's not just anticipatory talk like we hear the talking heads talking about. This is actually happening, where people are they're being forced to cut back because they can't afford the higher prices. I think we're going to see the same thing happen in the equity market. The same thing is going to happen in housing. The interesting thing, Chief, though, is this is gradual, and I will give the Fed, Federal Reserve, pats on the back for allowing it to be a gradual process and not a, you know, very sharp, let's just take care of this and get it over with response. This is, people have time to respond, and that's why we've been pushing, you know, cut back, you know, diversify, capture some of those gains that you've made. So that's one place that I think you can see that we'll see it, is just on the cost side. The other thing, which I mentioned earlier, is certainly on the job front. Unemployment is still low, but it's as people are out there, especially younger people looking for work, they may be the people that put a lot of their money into particular stocks. You know, a lot, I know quite a few younger people that I've talked to recently that are doing startups, whether it be
I want to expand on that subject, but let's go to break first. I also want to talk to you about the world of stocks and margin loans. Has it become almost a separate money supply? And also, I want to talk about the labor part, is the unemployment and everything, whether we're not seeing the give there, we're seeing the give in hours per week, which is not something I've ever seen before. I mean, maybe you can expand. SP Futures now up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 9. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up a buck and a half. NASDAQ Futures up 4. We were up more, but we're still up. Dow's up 20. Individual stocks. We got Cisco earnings came out. They're up a buck, and we had Walmart with pretty good earnings. They claim they've essentially, I'll use the term, stolen some business from people with more money. So the stock's up 371 at 6%. That's a big move. Walmart is a real lot of shares outstanding. That's a lot. That's a big move there. But we've seen, you know, Home Depot came out with revenue down year over year, and yet they're up from the announcement. So it doesn't even seem to really matter. I mean, we're just up. DAX up till today. I mean, it doesn't mean you got to trade that way today. Who knows what happens today? DAX, however, is down 54.3%. FTSE up 8.1%. CAC around down 34.4. So kind of a mixed bag, slightly to the downside there. In Asia, Nikkei not down, up 534, 1.4%, 38,920. Trying to make a run toward 40,000 again, it looks like. Hang Seng up 302, 1.5 again, over 19,000, 19,376. If Greg gets a second, he'll find out when that thing was under 16. I'm going to say November. I could be wrong. Shanghai up 2, 31.22. Yesterday is a way of review. Huge day, a record day. Dow Jones up 349, S&P up 61. These are 1% moves plus virtually every day. And we went several years without having one of those in the Obama administration. Not saying he was the cause of that, just pointing out historical time. NASDAQ up 231, 1.4%. Bonds unchanged, 4.35. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.44. I'm saying the Bund, I'm saying the 10-year rate at the Bund. Japan down 2 basis points, 0.93. Oil, which has been hovering in this high 70s, can't move. Again today, quiet day, up 27 cents, 78.90. Brent up 18 cents, 82.93. Natural gas up a penny, 2.43. RBOB unchanged, 2.50. Gold, which had a big run up yesterday, today coming back a little bit, down 8.30, 23.86. Will it get to 2,400? Time will tell. Silver up 8 cents, 29.81. That's been the real horse here. Copper down a penny, 4.91. Foreign exchange, the euro 108.6 against the dollar, kind of unchanged. Same thing with the pound, 126.5. Again, pretty much nothing going on there. Bitcoin down 28 bucks now, 66,023. So it's up off the 60,000 low, but still not to the 73 high, so kind of in the middle of that range. We have forced traffic, weather, sports. Nice day coming.
So Hang Seng was last below 16 in February. That was the 15th, and the Hang Seng got close April 17th. It dipped to 16,251.
So it was 3 months ago. It's up what? It's up
April
like
17th was 16,251.84.
Wow, so it's up 20% but virtually in 6 weeks.
It's a pretty pretty impressive move.
Yeah.
Anyways, 7:39 here in Chicago, 55 degrees, high of 72 today. Lots of fog, mostly cloudy later with possible thunderstorms this afternoon. Phoenix, 76 degrees right now, high of 98 there, partly sunny. Traffic, Kennedy from Montrose, 39 minutes. Inbound from Lake Cook, 65 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 48 minutes. Ryan from 95th is 33 minutes, and 294 to the Ryan is 44 minutes. NBA Celtics beat the Cavs. That was to win the East, 113-98. Mavs beat the Thunder, 104-92. MLB, White Sox beat the Nationals. That was 2-0. Diamondbacks beat the Reds at home. That was 2-1. And Cubs win at Braves, 7-1. NHL, Avs beat the Stars. That means Dallas is leading the series 3-2. And tonight we got the Rangers, Hurricanes, and the Oilers, Canucks. And that's all I got, Chief.
Don't we have the Bruins tonight, too?
I don't think, not tonight.
Because they weren't last night, so they're tomorrow.
Bruins are tomorrow, Friday, May 17th, and that's at 6 p.m. on TNT.
That means, man, I can't go to the Tripoli tomorrow night.
I'm good. Okay.
All right, well, just, you know, I got to know my nights. I can't go with all the Boston guys there. What do they call them? Mass holes? You guys from Boston?
Mass holes.
Yeah. Just saying.
Where's Dan?
Where's Dan?
There he is.
There he is.
I'm here.
Dan's not a mass hole. No, he's fine.
No.
So, Dan, I mean, kind of sort of tied us together. I mean, it's not traditional. It's not. I mean, Carl's been talking the last two or three months, and I think you listen in on that. Where the degradation in the labor market is not just, well, the last couple of weeks looks like people are getting laid off, but it's not just that. It's hours being, you know, instead of 40 or 37, and all of a sudden everybody's 35, and how you have wages actually creeping up a little, yet the weekly paycheck is not at all. It's actually down. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that, nor do I even know how to quantify it. Do you?
It's interesting when you were making the comment earlier, and I was going to mention this with Walmart coming out with, you know, relatively good earnings and relatively good story, and, you know, getting the, you know, just going back to what we were talking about, sort of more of the higher end consumer now shopping there just for affordability issues, but they also had job cuts. Right?
Yeah.
So that's the interesting piece, and that is, as I agree with you, sort of what's changing and what's different about this environment now is that before they couldn't find enough people to work, and now they're cutting jobs. And that's across the board. One of the things I started mentioning earlier is that a lot of our client base is baby boomer age, and, you know, now I have a lot of their children as well. But I find the conversations that I've had recently with the 40-something, the 35-something people who are professionals, the way they view not only the world and the economy and the financial markets, but also the way, more importantly, that they view their careers and their future and the job market is quite different than it was just a few years ago. These are people that were, you know, top of the class in college, you know, the ones that were, you know, worked hard to move ahead, that they're all of a sudden being faced with a different environment where just a few years ago they were in high demand, and now there are layoffs and there's concern. So I've seen the concern at that age group, you know, that like our kids' age group, not so much from people our age because they do have the nest egg that they've earned. But for the younger people, it's an area of concern. So going back to, again, where the cracks are or where the concern is, I'm seeing quite a bit more from the discussions I have with, you know, the 35-something, the 40-something professionals. And that's across all industries.
Well, Dan, what do you do if, I mean, I know Walmart obviously has people all over the place, but if they start cutting, I mean, one of the guys who used to do the help me out producing, Thomas, his then girlfriend at the time, got a job with Walmart. I mean, somehow or another, I think she did some kind of advertising, whatever it was. She was sometime in the advertising field where she did actual content of the video or whatever. Bright girl. So she gets hired by Walmart and she has to move to Bentonville. So he moves with her. She moves the family and her, and they're there for a year and a half, two. They ended up, I don't know what happened to her, but they ended up breaking up, blah, blah, blah. But What in God's name do you do if you're laid off in Bentonville, Arkansas?
Yeah, exactly. And that's been the trend. That's been the trend I've heard from people in tech and from other industries as well that got, you know, used to working from home or being able to work remotely, and now they're being forced to move to places that they really have no desire to move. And what's happening is that it's not like they have other jobs they can go to instead. There's fewer and fewer of those. So I do think this environment that we're in here, again, talking about cracks or where we can start seeing some, you know, some things going on that are signals of a slowing economy are just with not only in the labor market, but especially at that age group where you're either being forced to move or, you know, and they still have, the millennial age people still have the dilemma of affordability when it comes to housing. Well, their world is very real. They're very much dealing with the real world. They're trying to be realistic about what's going on. They're being affected by it day to day. And a lot of people in our age group, the baby boomer group, still have that euphemism, that optimism that we've always had, that's just sort of continuing into retirement, despite the fact that there are these other issues going on. Unless their children are going through them, or close, you know, neighbors or whatever, they're not really aware of it.
Well, I never took the right path. when it came to my own wealth, Dan, I mean, the right path would have been, you know, the minute I got out of school, you know, get married, get a job with like a bank or someplace, which I had all kinds of offers, and just hang there. And I think I would have got promoted along the way. I mean, I did everywhere place I was. Never really leave, sort of get involved in a couple of takeovers, be a survivor, maybe even have some stock in one of the places, and all of a sudden at my age I'm a gazillionaire, buy a house right out of school for 40 grand or 50 grand or 100, and now the thing's worth $1.5 million. If you just did that, you know, depending on the timing you are, you just, you know, and you think you might think you're a genius, but you're really not. Timing was just on your side. Well, a lot of these kids now realize timing is not on their side.
Exactly,
they can't begin to come up with a $300,000 down payment for the same house that Ma and Pa bought when they were 25. They're not even on the same planet. I mean, but I guess right now we have, in terms of the stocks, I mean, I'm looking at Home Depot. And again, this is a great company, obviously. Although it's not, you know, when did you first start your first Home Depot visit? I remember those days, Dan, like the first one that opened in this area. The guy in the electrical aisle, knew a lot about electric. The dude probably had Home Depot stock, and he was doing exceptionally. They don't do that anymore, do they?
I don't think so. I don't think the benefits there are as good as they were. I also think that a lot more of the people who are on the floor at Home Depot are, even though they may be retired from a related industry, they're more generalists. You don't have somebody that is really necessarily an expert on the electrical side, or because I do have some friends that went to work there in retirement, and it isn't really quite the same. I guess one thing I was getting at was which companies are going to do well. What is it going to be? Amazon? Is it going to be Home Depot? Is it going to be Nvidia? And a lot of that has to do with how they treat their employees, and not only the benefits and the pay, but the environment that they create. And I do think that's going to be more important as we go forward. Listening to people who have worked in these organizations, even a friend that had worked at Home Depot who was, after the pandemic, was trying to decide, hey, do I go back there or not and continue doing this, or maybe do something else? They have to provide incentives still to get the right talent, and I'm not sure they're doing that. And part of the problem, and again, it's not an age, I'm not using, trying to pick on a particular age group, but part of the problem is that a lot of the senior people have retired. So a lot of the middle management people who don't have experience with, you know, hiring staff, you know, running operations, they're being challenged. They're being forced to make decisions that they don't have a lot of experience making.
Well, I would agree. Again, this is not any sort of because the world's outlook is different. You know, different to all this stuff changes. But I'm just going to pick on Home Depot here for a second. Now, I didn't go through every single line of their earnings thing, but the fact is, revenue was down year over year, right? Okay, so
yes.
So you and I might say, that's okay. Maybe they raise some prices and the margins are better or the economy looks better going forward. Because you don't value stuff in the rearview mirror. You try and value stuff outside the front mirror or not the front window, right? But I look at this now. Last year, when the revenue was, quote, better, a little bit, you know, just a real little bit, on 5/18/23, the stock is 295. Okay, it traded as high as like 390 something, and now it's, let's say, 350. It's 349 and change. Okay, so if the stock was still 295, I would say, okay, they absorbed not the best year, and now we're looking forward from here. But this, the stock's up from there. Now, my question is, now it's next quarter, and we're, maybe they're going to pick up, and blah, blah, blah. I hope they do. Certainly, I've been shopping more there, so they got some of my cash. So what happens next quarter if we're down again? And the next quarter, maybe we're down again a little bit, 1%, half of 1%. When is somebody going to say, this 349 looks pretty friggin' high to me? This thing should be like 249. It looks to me they're not growing. I mean, when does that day ever come? Or does the Fed just pour more money in the system to where the 349, it now goes to 400, but the dollar is worth less, which is what happened last time? I mean, there's like a lot of choices there that didn't used to be, Dan.
Yeah, and some of it could have to do with the new administration as well, in terms of those, you know, where that support comes from going forward. If we have another Trump regime, then we could possibly see that those inflated values continue, even though the fundamentals don't warrant the valuation. There's really a point where, like I said, people become myopic and they just see all the upside and they see what they want to see. The other thing I'll say going along with that is the analysts, the street analysts, first of all, there are far fewer of them. And secondly, they're generally being more reactive than proactive with their recommendations. So they're not getting out in front. And the main reason is that they want to keep winning, and they've been, you know, the fundamentals might be telling them to pull back, and then the stock keeps going up. So they are, as a group, the street analysts are being more conservative. They're being more looking in the rear view window rather than trying to look forward. And they're not as willing to go out on a limb because that could cost them their job. So they're saying, hey, you know, it's fairly valued. Home Depot is fairly valued. And then the stock goes up another 10%. And then they're not, you know, so that, I think that's a trend that's happening as well. And then you also, one further trend is just that people have access to a lot more information today than they did when we were starting out in our careers. And a lot of those resources that people have are individuals who are making YouTube videos or coming out with their own opinion on a stock or a company or a trend or an industry. And if somebody is caught up in listening to that, they might find something that supports their viewpoint. Yeah, I like Home Depot. And then they're reading an article or they're listening to a podcast where somebody has, you know, a really positive view. And they're going to say, okay, that's fine. That's all I need to hear. Rather than doing like we do and reading five different reviews with differing opinions. So I think the part of it is just being a little more open-minded and also stepping back and looking at the big picture, and most importantly, relying on people like us who do this for a living.
I would agree. I do, of course. Of course, you. Whenever you talk, Dan, you always get me thinking, coming up with a question. So I'm gonna hit you with the million-dollar question here. What you just said was, there's less and less people really doing the analytical work than used to be, right? I believe you said that.
Yes.
Okay. But then you said, which most people would say the same thing, and by the way, I'm not disagreeing, you said, but now people have way better access to information, but the information is worse than it used to be. So what does that mean exactly? I got more access to garbage, basically.
Yeah, it's just, well, part of what we learned and I learned as a portfolio manager is really how to sort through information. And back in the day, we had inboxes, right?
Yeah.
Inbox just kept growing and growing, and there's only so much time and so many hours in the day. So I think the the biggest challenge starting out is not reading the Wall Street Journal cover to cover. I mean, I remember doing that initially when I was grad school, and you know, reading every page because you didn't want to miss anything, and not, you know, reading through every article. But then you learn how to disseminate information. You learn the sources that are reliable, and you know, over a period of time, and you don't fall in love with any one of those sources. You have to really keep your mind open to you know, reading different articles, and not only looking at a specific company, but looking at some of the trends in the industry, trends in the economy, trends in consumer sentiment, trends in home building. If you talk going back to Home Depot,
well, Dan, you
trends
were
in innovation.
You were like a guy,
possible, but he was renovating their homes, and I know plenty of people still are, but I don't hear it as quite as often as I did say 5 or 10 years ago.
But now you're a guy that was always on the inside of the industry, but how can I put this correctly? You were a guy that always wanted to read the Wall Street Journal and all that stuff, and I imagine you were a Barron's guy because they had really good stuff in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But now, if you were on the trading floor, it was sort of different because that came at night. You had to have, you know, stuff at your right in front of you. So when I first started, we were in a pit with, was it Owens, Revlon, and the hell was the other one? Evans Products. So, but you had the tape in front of you, right? And if you wanted to, you could run up to what they used to call that stupid thing, the Quotran, and you could put in and get the whole article. But what you could do is you could filter all the stuff going across the tape to essentially your stocks. Or when I got to the OEX and the index, we had the tape running on one of the big screens. But they would get rid of the stuff, a lot of the stuff for the individual stocks, because nobody really cared. It was the stuff that affected the whole market. So you read the stuff all day long that affected you. So after work, you went to the health club and you went to the bar. You really weren't about to read Wall Street Journal at night, because that's all you've been doing is reading all day long. So it was kind of a different view of the stuff. But it's interesting how you look at, I mean, when does this come? I'm going to say right now there's no connection with any of these. There's been earnings will come out. Now, some places just get, you know, thrashed. I mean, I can't believe it's Disney still down where it is, but they don't like that one at all. I mean,
I think the, you know, going back again to those days, I think the research and the fundamental research, talking to companies, which is something we still do today, you can do all that you want. But one of the advantages I had, and one of the things I'm really grateful for, is actually doing my own trading as a buy side manager, and actually spending time with the Wall Street traders and spending time on the street, because that flow of funds, the information flow that the traders had, was absolutely essential to making money in the market. So you could love a company, you could love the fundamentals, you could say the valuation is good, but if you didn't understand the flow of funds, you didn't understand how the stock traded, who was buying it, and that information, fortunately, I developed a really good relationship with street traders. I would say that's the piece of information that a retail investor does not have. So the retail investor can read all the reports, they can do their valuation, but they don't have that third leg of the stool, which is the trading.
Well, you're also getting the report 8 hours after everybody else got it.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's funny when you, I'm actually, Dan, very jealous of all the contacts that you've made through the years and the knowledge you have. But when you're in the trading pit, the knowledge, let's put it this way, the message was much faster. How can I put this? But it all was, if you're standing there with nothing going on, everybody's talking about last night's Bulls game, and all of a sudden, eight brokers all of a sudden magically get a buy order for calls or seller of puts or something, or the other way around, you see the futures start to tick up. It doesn't matter what the news is. It's just bullish. I guess I'd like to know who it was and who said what, but do I really care? That's a question. I just got to get out of the way of this one and see how bad. We got the message fast, believe me, but we didn't know really what the basis was. We just knew that was the message.
But it kind of goes to what we started out our discussion with, is just the, you know, watching the momentum driving the stocks and understanding that, yeah, the fundamentals are good, or maybe no, the fundamentals are fading, or they're leveling off, or the valuation looks high, or maybe it looks okay. But the final piece, the final leg of the trading, of understanding where the money's coming from, you know, who's selling, who's buying, and that is absolutely essential to making money in the market.
Why, Dan, do you and I, maybe we've been beaten up by the system enough to where you and I, if we want to protect ourselves or make a shift more into fixed income, if we think the markets maybe had one hell of a run, or I should have been more in fixed income all along because of my age or whatever, and now I got away with not being it, and now maybe it's time to revisit this or at least look at my portfolio again. You and I are convinced we need to do that in advance, because we know that we're not going to get the memo if it ever does happen. I mean, I didn't get the memo to the upside in August of 82 either, by the way. It just happened. Yet regular absolutely. Investors now are absolutely convinced that they can watch TV. We got a dasher. They can watch TV, and Kramer's going to let them know the day before, and they'll be able to get out. What are they talking about?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, that's really not the way it works. And going back to the retail investor, the biggest challenge I hear from retail investors or do-it-yourself investors is when to sell. They ask me, how do you know when it's time to sell? And I tell them exactly what you just said, Chief. First of all, you trim off the top when things are overvalued. Secondly, you got to really understand the flow of funds and how things trade. And that takes years of experience. That cannot be replaced by, you know, listening to Kramer.
Well, last comment here, and just give me a yes or no whether you agree. My grandfather, who got a guy died in like 1968, but he was already into the markets, right? And he loved it. I mean, and he would say, first thing you got to know, Tom, is don't be afraid to leave a little something for the next guy. If you buy something for 20 and you sell it for 22 and it goes to 22 and a half, don't even look at it. I mean, this guy's a boilermaker, tell me. But right now, a retail person, if you were to say, pick a stock here, I mean, whatever, pick XXX, and somebody has it at 100 and it's trading 200, and you say, you know, maybe you ought to lighten up. If it's 202 the next morning, you know you're going to get the phone call. Look what you did to me.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you can't be afraid to leave a little something for the next guy. How many times in your whole career have you actually sold a top or bought a bottom exactly?
You never do, but you want to be in the right direction. You want to be ahead of the game in terms of the trend, absolutely.
The day the rally started, there was a guy named, I hope he's still alive, a terrific guy named Ricky Castle. He was older than me. He was in the Kodak crowd, which is the crowd where the rally really started, believe it or not, yeah. Along the part of Kodak. And he was the main market maker in there. And the day we got so busy, they didn't even write anything down. He just threw his cards down and said, I'll buy them, I'll sell them. And this is the way the world was in those days. Nobody tried to stiff him. You remember mostly all your trades, but he had like five pages of out trades, and he took them all. And he had a nice day. He goes, I bought 100 lot on the bottom. And I go, you had a huge day. I bought him at 1 1/8. I sold him at 1 3/16. They closed at like 6 or something. But he had a nice day. Anyway, he goes, I bought the absolute bottom. I couldn't wait to get rid of him. Anyway, on that note, Dan, have a nice weekend. I'll talk at you next week, but if not sooner. S&P futures now unchanged. NASDAQ up 50 cents. We got nothing here.
Said these words before.